Hello and welcome to another episode of the Brooklyn Buzz podcast presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me as always on the Buzz, Jack Manuel. What's up, Jack?
Not the best weekend for Nets fans, Nick, but hopefully going into New York, we can finally get the W against the rival.
Yes, it has not been a good three-game stretch, three-game losing streak, including another, blown call by the refs at the end of the game that cost the Nets a W. It's been stressful. It's been a stressful morning for me. My laptop just caught some water, and it's not doing too well, but we're going to talk Nets. We're going to try to brighten it up. We got some good topics at the end. But we're going to do a quick three-game recap. But before we do that, just a reminder, you can listen to the Brooklyn Buzz on iTunes, Block Talk Radio, and OTGBasketball.com. But let's start with the OKC game. Obviously, we already had the win over OKC in Mexico City. We go into OKC, and we play well. We play well for three quarters. Fourth quarter, we kind of thunder down a little bit. It's a close game at the end. Westbrook gets a game winner when Paul George makes some contact with Dinwiddie. 108-109. What were your thoughts after that game?
It was just one of those, it was deja vu a little bit, Nick. Funnily enough, the starters in their worst of the week, one of the nominations was Paul George's play and the referees for not noticing it. I think plenty of fans and Kenny Atkinson, we saw his recent outburst, which I'm sure we'll get to in the recaps. It seems to be just a trend for Nets fans out there that we're just not getting the love from the referees. But in terms of the game itself, my boy Joe Harris just continues to do just incredible things off the bench. He's now third all-time in three-pointers made off the bench for Brooklyn Nets players. He's just the absolute earmark of consistency. Keeps on getting buckets, keeps on making plays, keeps on playing some nice defense, and he almost lifts everyone whenever he's out there. Joe Harris is going to make a play. And if we didn't have that poor last quarter, things could have gone really differently.
Yeah, I think in the fourth quarter, we were outscored 23-35 by OKC. So, we play a solid quarter. I think Raymond Felton himself had like an 8-0 run in that quarter. But your guy, Joe Harris, 7-10 from the field, 5-5 from three. Like you said, consistency. And he does all the small things. He's tough. He's willing to go out there, dive for the loose balls, get in there for some rebounds, foul some guys. I think Kenny Atkinson said yesterday that Joe Harris would be the most likely football player on the team. So... That's pretty cool stuff. Jared Allen, another good game from him in OKC. 12 points, 11 rebounds. I believe his first double-double. He also hit a clutch three in the fourth quarter, which forced Steven Adams to then again, get absorbed to the corner a little bit more. And I think it gave Dinwiddie a lay open layup. So, but like you said, the refereeing is just getting annoying to an extent because it's not like it's just in our head. It's like the 2-minute report is saying, the refs made a mistake and it's late in the game. And these calls aren't just like, oh, it's one call here or there. That's not that big a deal. No, this was the last play of the game. And obviously, Paul George prevents Dinwiddie from playing good defense on Westbrook. So it just kind of sucks NBA when that happens.
Yeah, the NBA recently, I think, came out with, there's been the whole furor in terms of not just Nets fans, but players across the league as well. They came out with a statement in regards to improving player and official relationships, and it seemed to be sort of generic sort of stuff that you'd expect, but it's going to be interesting to see if it actually has an effect and where that sort of relationship goes, whether it continues to deteriorate or it starts to finally improve and the respect sort of starts to get there. I think for Nets fans, I think it's just because we're almost the forgotten child of the NBA. We are getting a little bit more respect with the way we're playing, but we're not getting the wins, which, unfortunately, at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to, wins and losses. And officials, they don't see a star player. They don't see a Kyrie Irving or a Stephen Curry or LeBron James on the team. It's like, who cares? They're not going to really yell at me. I'm not going to get shit from Adam Silver or whatever if I don't give him the free throw. That might be subconsciously in their minds when they're officiating against a team like us. A team like OKC, three big stars, and a guy like Steven Adams, who's a larger-than-life sort of guy. Our Brooklyn Nets players are sort of those guys that go about their business. They're sort of no-fuss dudes. You look at Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and Spencer Dinwiddie. D'Angelo Russell has that little bit of a spark about him, but at the same time, he hasn't been really known. He got that ridiculous tech a la Tim Duncan style for clapping on the bench, sarcastically clapping on the bench. So it's just, I think it's a product of just who the Nets are right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think being a young team, you need to earn your respect. And like you said, the referees have been an issue across the league. We talked about in the NBA a little bit. Somewhat, it's, the refs job is extremely hard. It also doesn't help when the players complain about every call. You know, when you foul somebody and it could be a foul 50-50, just let it go. But when it's clear-cut calls, that's when you have to really go in and yell at the refs. If you yell about every call, it's not going to really matter. But back to the Nets, LeVert was benched in this game after he had a rough stretch against Raymond Felton. I think there was a couple picks where he went underneath and Felton was able to hit some jumpers. Obviously, it wasn't all on LeVert because the bigs didn't necessarily step up. But LeVert didn't see clutch time minutes. I think Crabbe saw the clutch time minutes. Do you think that impacted the Nets? And maybe if they played, Joe Harris or Caris LeVert, they win this game over Allen Crabbe?
It remains to be seen, Nick. I think Allen Crabbe has improved his defense enough that he earns his spot out there in that time. His body, his physicality, his general length. That's something that Caris LeVert has. But I think, Coach Kenny's trying to impart lessons onto some of these young players. Caris LeVert, not necessarily punished for his play on Raymond Felton, but that can't happen consistently. You can't get a guy with the talent level of a Raymond Felton. Now, he's a journeyman, a la Jameer Nelson, those sort of guys. Those guys just get buckets. They just know how the game works. But Caris LeVert needs to be switched on and not underestimate a guy like that. And in this sense, hopefully it's a real lesson, a learning curve for Caris that in the future games, he's engaged, 110% of the time. Coach Kenny doesn't play his guys high minutes. So for those 25 to 28 minutes, if you're on, you've got to be really on.
Yeah, I think you made a great point, switched on. He was a little lackadaisical. The Nets kind of had a solid lead, and, that was a big part of the game. But moving on, it sucks. It's another possible win that we could have had and, closer to that 500 mark. But on to another game. And this game probably had some after effects of that game, and that's the Nets and Bucks. 116-91, Bucks take the W. Low start for the Nets. The first quarter was 15-33 Bucks. It kind of felt like there was some mental fatigue after seeing that loss, similar to what we saw against Detroit after the Toronto game.
Definitely, and it didn't help that Giannis's first game back came against us as well.
Yes,
I think that sort of short stretch he had resting his knee, the whole Jason Kidd effect, rallying behind the new coach certainly had an effect as well. So I think the Bucks just wanted it more. And more so, they needed the W. I think if they were to lose to us, not to say that it would have been an embarrassing loss, but for the Nets, it just seemed like at one of those letdown games, like you mentioned, the Pistons sort of game, the Raptors sort of game, and in this case, the Bucks game, their length really troubled us, and their overall defense, our shot selection was a bit poor. And against the Bucks team who has been, in terms of Jason Kidd's system, it's almost like how they're going to defend and how to get the good shot. It just seemed that the Nets sort of forced the issue a little too much. Though it was nice to see some improved play from D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah. The Bucks, length definitely caused a problem with their athleticism as well. They did a good job just, disrupting the Nets offense. And like I said, the energy just wasn't there. And the Nets didn't really want to fight. They didn't want to add some, physical element to it. Sometimes the Nets play soft, and I think this is one of those games. Like you said, the shots, the shot selection wasn't necessarily great, but I also felt like they were just missing a lot of open shots. They missed a ton of open threes, 8 of 34 from three. That's 23%. I'm sure that there was probably, 5 or 10 bad, 3-point attempts in there, but I'm sure there's probably 5 or 10 great 3-point attempts that they just missed that were wide open. And I think that's obviously something of not having the most talented team. Missing shots is just going to happen.
It does. And I think as well, not having Rondé out there, I think generally he's been our best performer, our best defender. His passing has improved out of sight. And just not having one of your best players on your team, it just has an effect. It causes guys like, Damari Carroll have to step up, Caris LeVert, those sort of wings, Allen Crabbe, Joe Harris, all these guys need to take that extra step in the absence of a really critical player in our system. And Rondé would have been perfect against these sort of long, gangly guys because he has the capability to guard them. Even Giannis, in his comeback game, I think he would have been the perfect one-on-one defender against him. But it forced a guy like a Damari Carroll to use more energy on that side of the floor and sort of switch up the different sort of guys to put on him. So it certainly hurt in that sense. But at the end of the day, injuries happen to every team in the NBA, and we've got to learn to make do without them.
Yeah. Rondé only logged 13 minutes in that game, and then he went down. And, you could kind of tell he's not only is he a consistent player in defensively, and then his length obviously could have helped against the Bucks, but his energy. I think, he's really liked by his teammates, and when he's out there, it definitely helps. But what can you do? Like you said, injuries happen. D'Angelo, he showed us some good and bad. It was a little bit of a rough start. I think he had 7 turnovers, but then late in that third quarter, he just turned on. I think he had like a little 8-0 run by himself, and we saw some of those D'Lo flashy plays. There was one layup in particular where he just faked the shit out of Matthew Dellavedova and got himself a wide open layup.
Yeah, it was really pretty to see him finally having some nice highlights. 1 of 6 in the first half, 10 points in the third quarter, 4 of 6 shooting. He scored 11 points in the previous three, ended up finishing with 14 points in 21 minutes. Nice little game from him. I think he might have known going into the Timberwolves game that he might have been having a rest. So I think he probably left it all out there knowing that it was sort of a scheduled rest. So I would have liked to see him play a little bit longer, but I think this is probably all part of the injury management in terms of his comeback. But great to see him back, and hopefully bigger and better things to come.
Yeah, exactly. And we definitely can need him. Like I hinted before, we could probably use another playmaker in the starting lineup, especially when they start to trap or, play really physical on Dinwiddie, or they just have a really good defender on him. Dinwiddie's not that all-star breaker yet. He's not, he's only been doing this for a little bit of time, and this is his first year getting a lot of attention. So having another guy out there like D'Angelo definitely could help him. One thing on the Bucks side, do you think at some point, we've mentioned this before, like Giannis, I think, scored. He had already had 20-plus points, and it wasn't even the second half yet. Do you think the Nets just need to start sending hard double teams sometimes?
Yeah, we've mentioned that, I think, about Kristaps Porzingis as well, Nick. I think it depends on the play type, because Giannis is quite a great passer. So I think it works more for a guy like Porzingis, who is still learning to deal with the double team and pass out of it, and his assist numbers are quite lowly. Whereas Giannis has the all-round game that he can punish you no matter what it is, whether he finds the open teammate. And the Bucks are a decent three-point shooting, a decent perimeter team, and three-point shooting team. You kick it out to a Chris Middleton, Malcolm Brogdon, Tony Snell, they'll punish you. So I think the play has to be right. But if it's not working, then you might as well experiment with it. At the end of the day, if the best player beats you, sometimes you just can't stop them. And I think he looked fresh, he looked ready, and I think this was always going to happen. It would have been very surprising to see him with eight days off, sort of rest, so to speak, one of those LeBron sort of rest, him to come back without less than 110%.
Yeah, I think the Bucks also started this game. Excuse me. The Bucks also started hitting this. They started this game hitting a lot of threes. Guys that aren't necessarily hitting their shot. Giannis hit a couple threes in this game, and at that point, I was like, this is going to be a tough game. But I think sometimes, maybe not just a straight double team, but you have to scheme up some way to kind of stop these guys when you don't have that elite, stopper. We mentioned Rondé being a good defensive player, but he's still not consistently shutting people down. He has trouble with some guys, so I think scheme-wise, there has to be some adjustment. In this game in general, I think the Nets they literally played one good quarter. They played their third quarter, which was they won 37-23. The first quarter, they lost 15-33, like I mentioned. The fourth quarter, they lost 19-35. So they had a chance in the fourth. They just got bodied, and they couldn't perform with the Bucks.
No, and I think, like you mentioned in the OKC game, Nick, we nail some of those shots. It takes away the transition opportunities from a guy like Giannis. Yes. He gets the board and he's a one-man fast break, a la Ben Simmons, LeBron James. You make those shots, it slows the game down a little bit. Yes, the Nets like to play with pace, but when you're versing a guy like Giannis Antetokounmpo, he can run and spread the floor like literally no other guy in today's NBA. His length and absolute all-round physical dominance is impossible to stop. Especially for a team like Brooklyn that doesn't have any, famed defenders like an Andre Roberson or a Paul George. We're going to get eaten alive by a guy like him unless we make those shots. And at the end of the day, they didn't fall, and it let Giannis and the Bucks sort of have their way with us.
Yeah, and it was a tough loss because you kind of had to watch the game, but the Nets kept it close enough where they might make a run to get it close late in the fourth, but they didn't. Moving on to another game on the road on this road trip, which has been tough. Whoever gave us the schedule, OKC, Milwaukee, and Minnesota, thanks. Like, really. But 111-97 Minnesota over the Nets. The Nets were without, three of their best guys. Caris LeVert, D'Angelo Russell, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. So it wasn't really expected to be a win, but still, not a great start to this game. The energy wasn't great. There was just too many, mistakes. And again, just missing a lot of threes. 9 of 30 from three in this game. The last two games combined, they shot 26%, 17 of 64 from three, missing a lot of open shots. Some of them are bad threes, but some of them are just missing wide open shots.
Yeah, and I think that happens far too often for our Nets, Nick. Stauskas was quite nice. He stepped up in the absence of some of those guys. Isaiah Whitehead, I like whenever he's out there. I know we've mentioned the fact that, you know, we may not see a lot of him this season, but when he's out there, he's making an impact. He's bringing energy, which is what we really love. And Jahlil Okafor was a real bright spot. I think in the absence of three of our best players, to see him have a really good night, his first over 20-point game performance for our Nets, it was really positive. But we didn't get the W because at the end of the day, Karl Anthony Towns, Jimmy Butler, Jamal Crawford, these guys are just, the talent is just too strong. And the three teams that we've versed in the past three games are just far too talented to compete with guys like us. We don't have the all-star level talent. You know, you could chuck in a Spencer Dinwiddie into an all-star snub team. But, you know, Karl Anthony Towns, Jimmy Butler coming back again, a la Giannis Antetokounmpo the game before. You know, these guys are switched on and they're an in-season, they're a form team right now. And they're not going to let drop those W's when they're looking for that fourth, third spot to sort of solidify their spot in the playoffs. So I think we're, the schedule just, it did us dirty, Nick.
Yeah, and all these teams at home, you know, makes it so much tougher. And then the fact, I think, that the Nets lost that game in OKC on that call, you know, like, mental toughness and, you know, not getting the call and playing, you know, they didn't play a great game, but they played a good enough game where they probably should have beat OKC and they lost that game. I think it hurts you in the next two because, like you said, you know, you don't have the talent to match them, but maybe if you outplay them, you might win the game. But if the refs aren't helping you out, it kind of gives you that in the back of your head. So I think that definitely had an impact. But like you said, Okafor, 21 points, 6 rebounds in 24 minutes. Probably the most confident I think I've seen him against, you know, solid NBA guys. Like a lot of the time he's been scoring, it's been against, you know, backups. He scored on Towns a few times, whose defense is inconsistent, but it's still good to see. And I think he showed Kenny enough where he might play him more moving forward.
And I think that's the right decision. We pick up Nick Stauskas and Jahlil Okafor. Obviously, Jahlil Okafor is the head of that package with the pick to go with it. But if we have, you know, 30 or so games left, 35 games left in the season, we need to see the most out of Jahlil Okafor to make the decision. Is he a part of our future, whether it's a bench piece like a Greg Monroe, or is it a possible starter and sort of a tandem with the Jared Allen? It's going to be interesting to see how he maintains his performance. Hopefully, Coach Kenny can give him some consistency in terms of his minutes. But I think Jahlil is doing the right things. He's seeing me more engaged on the defensive end as well, which is really nice to see. But I think the key... I think that most people took from this game from Bleacher Report and everywhere else was Coach Kenny's reaction to that missed call from Joe Harris. I've never seen Coach that angry before in my life. And I think it was a product of a season-long build-up of frustration. Our players after the game were actually quite positive about the reaction. They were all saying it was quite positive to see the reaction of Atkinson. Good to see that Coach has our back. And I think at the end of the day, it's almost like a sacrificial lamb of sorts. You know, if this gets media attention, which it has been, it's been all over Twitter, you know, maybe that's like, oh, the refs are, you know, checking their Twitters just before the game. Like, oh, well, maybe we should probably pay attention to the Brooklyn Nets a little bit more if they're getting all this media attention. So subconsciously, that might have an effect. And whether it was, I don't think it was necessarily pre-planned, but the spur of the moment reaction and passion that Coach Kenny had is something you can't discount, despite the fact that the Minnesota commentary team was just absolute homers to the nth degree.
I haven't heard the Minnesota commentary. And obviously
it's what you'd expect to say, oh, a coach shouldn't act like this, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, who's your coach again? Tom Thibodeau. All right, yeah, okay. That's the pot calling the kettle black. Yeah, I think that's that's literally the definition of the term, but I get it. But I think we take for granted how good our commentary team and how unbiased guys like Ian Eagle, Ryan Russo, and Sarah Kustok are. They're just so level-headed. And because the Nets haven't been a highly successful team, they always call it really well. But that's another discussion for another day. But it was good to see Coach Kenny sticking up for his guys. And Joe Harris and Spencer Dinwiddie certainly made remarks about the fact that it left them feeling good.
Yeah, honestly, I'm a little surprised we almost haven't seen this from Kenny earlier. Like, he doesn't seem like a guy would do this, but after all the calls just not going the Nets' way, and especially them being, like, clear-cut fouls sometimes that they're not getting, and I think what made it more frustrating is you have Tibbs on the other side, who you can literally hear on the broadcast yelling and complaining about calls, and Kenny complains about a call where he doesn't even really say anything that aggressive from across the court where Joe Harris was clearly fouled and he doesn't get the call and then he gets teed up, I can see why he flipped out. Like, it's not that crazy, especially when you think about all the calls the Nets aren't getting. Like, in this game alone, I'm not saying that Minnesota didn't deserve free throws, but the free throw differential was 26-15. And there's plenty of calls where they just didn't call. And I think the one thing, from a fan's perspective, a referee's perspective, a player's perspective, a coach's perspective, the one thing you want is a consistent game officiated. You know, it doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be consistent. So if you're going to let them, you know, get away with some bumps on one end, you got to do the same thing on the other end. And I don't think that's always been the case for the Nets.
No, definitely not. And I'm on team rankings NBA right now, Nick. And this, in 2017, this season, the Nets are seventh in free throw attempts per game at 23.7. In our last three, that goes down to 20. Last game against the Timberwolves, we only had 15. So, I mean, obviously, when you're losing the game, that's going to happen. So, I mean, you take that with a grain of salt. But you also take into account the fact that the Nets are a renowned team for getting to the line, despite our lowly status as 13th in the East. So, and that's been a case for us even last year, the season before. So, whether the refs are continuing to show us the lack of respect, or whether it's a byproduct of the Nets' poor play, I think it's a little bit from column A and column B. But I think hopefully this sort of spurs the refs to finally, if anything, I mean, you know, we've heard Spencer Dinwiddie come out, that did nothing. Our coach has now come out. Whether that makes an impact, but it'll certainly be interesting going into the Knicks game, seeing where the refs are at in terms of how they officiate our Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously there's a lot of tension in the NBA with the refs and, you know, the teams and the players and all that. But I think you made a great point, and I didn't get on it before, but it's going to bring more attention to the Nets not getting calls. If I had the time right now, I would go through all the last Nets games, you know, from earlier this season and take all the clips and the 2 minute, you know, just the 2 minute reports that the Nets aren't getting that cost them games and post that up, because that alone should have got the Nets more attention. But I think the fact that everybody's going with Kenny getting so pissed, and Kenny being a pretty well-respected guy around the league, yeah, you know, it's not like he's Greg Popovich or anything, but guys like him, players like him. And I think the NBA is going to probably take a little bit longer look at it than they might have if he didn't flip out. Not saying it was the best way to go about it, but no complaints from me, because I would have probably done the same thing.
Yeah, I think that that tweet thread would be quite long, Nick. I'm sure there'd be plenty of your own tweets, and then there'd be plenty of like NBA PR official ones. There'd be plenty of Nets ones from Anthony Puccio and Nets Daily. It'd be a ridiculously long thread, let's put it that way. But hopefully, you know, I mean, like you mentioned, the referee players coaches sort of relationship is at a really you know, sort of fractured level right now. Whether that improves, I'm assuming it will. I think players are looking to the All-Star break just for a bit of rest. You know, the early start to the season may have had an impact in terms of their, you know, mental, physical fatigue. We've talked about our mental fatigue in general. You know, this Nets team might be a little bit tired, and that's sort of having an effect. Coach Kenny's probably had tired after this long road trip where we come up against some of the best teams in the NBA. So I think the refs are a small part of the problem. But they're certainly having some sort of an impact. But I think our play is one thing, and the officiating is another sort of separate thing.
Yeah, and I'll say this, you know, like the refs aren't the reason the Nets are under 500.
No,
you know, it's the Nets why they're under 500. But I'll say this too, is when you're not the most talented team, you know, you don't have a ton of all-stars, and you lose these close games, and you're trying to build confidence, it hurts you more than it would hurt, you know, a team like, you know, the Bucks or the Timberwolves if they had lost that game. You know what I mean? That or OKC, for example. OKC was hot. They lost to the Nets in a close game. I don't think it really bothers them. But the fact that the Nets lost and they didn't get the call and they probably should have won, and that's happened to them multiple times this season, it affects your psyche in some way. You know, as much as you don't want it to, you still have to think about it at some point during the game.
Well, if you look at it from the other side, Nick, could you imagine if that was Alan Crabb laying a screen on Paul George for Spencer Dinwiddie and Russell Westbrook's interviewed after the game? He would have been absolutely going off, and that would have got all the media attention in the world, because, you know, it's Russell Westbrook. He's a guy that everyone pays attention to. But, you know, it's Spencer Dinwiddie, it's Alan Crabb, it's Coach Kenny, it's D'Angelo Russell, it's Caris LeVert. The comments made by our guys aren't going to get the attention that an OKC team is, because they've got the superstars, they've got the cachet, they've got the market, they're on ESPN. you know, the Nets are the Nets. And until we sort of get that sort of status as an elite team, hopefully, which in the coming years, we're always going to be sort of an afterthought, which is sad to say. But I think, you know, these mini outbursts by a guy like a Coach Kenny, Spencer Dinwiddie, you know, we get the W. I think we start to build up some wins. Maybe that helps. It's hard. It's a really complicated situation.
Honestly, if you had a gun to my head right now and you told me the Nets had won those two games against Boston and Toronto in around the first, you know, second week of January, I think the season is probably a little bit different right now. I'm not saying, you know, they're a lot better, but I wouldn't have been surprised if they picked up a couple more wins, because that type of confidence kind of changes the season. But that's for another day. We've kind of talked about this and hinted at the whole pod. You know, the Nets have improved this year, but you still see a lot of Nets fans complaining. You know, they want Sean Marks to make a move to improve this team. They need to make another trade. But part of us, you know, you have to realize this Nets team won 20 games last year. They're on pace to win 31. A lot of guys have improved. Jeremy Lin's been down the entire season. He played literally one game. D'Angelo Russell has missed, you know, a good chunk of the season as well. Guys have been banged up. What are your thoughts on the Nets? Are Nets fans being too greedy? Like, should they be okay with the improvement the Nets made? A 10-win jump is a good jump, especially with the jump the players have made, like Spencer Dinwiddie, LeVert, D'Lo, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. Do you think fans are being greedy, or they should want more?
I'm going to tread very lightly with this one, Nick, because I know it is the Nets fans that make this podcast great. But I think there's elements where I like that the fact that our fans, including us, have expectations on this team. We want to do well. We expect the team to do well now. You know, we've seen increased play from our players, our coaching staff, our front office. So we expect to do things in a better form. In that, you take everything and you look at it in a larger perspective and you step back a little bit. Yes, we've seen increased play from all of these guys we wouldn't have expected. Zach Lowe had a piece earlier in the year. I think it was in his top 10 players of the week. He mentioned the fact that, you know, the Nets are going to need a guy to sort of burst out a la, like, you know, a Draymond Green type that just, you know, is unexpected. Spencer Dinwiddie has been that guy. D'Angelo Russell, our best player, has missed a quarter of the season. Jeremy Lin, our starting point guard, our franchise guy, if you want to put the personality, taking that into context, has missed a heap of time. You know, we've had injuries consistently to Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Damari Carroll. Guys have missed games here and there. I think there's an element of greed, but I'd rather be greedy than not showing any desire at all, which I think has been a case for the Nets since sort of that whole shit show after Billy King left the franchise in disarray. So to actually have some expectations and some, you know, exposure for the team and some, you know, desire and some attention on the team is a good thing. But it does need to be taken with the fact that, okay, Coach Kenny is in his second year as a coach. Sean Marks is in his second year as a GM. Our roster is probably one of the 10 youngest in the entire association. The direction and the goals for this team in the coming years are different to a Knicks or a Bucks or a Sixers. You need to look at where the teams are at and look at where the Nets are at and compare it to, not compare it to the rest of the association, but compare it to within and say, okay, what are our goals within the and within the franchise? And go, okay, have we achieved them? I think we resoundingly have.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, I think to some extent Nets fans are being a little greedy because, you know, the main point of the season was never to really make the playoffs, especially when Lin went down. I think those expectations kind of, you know, got lowered a lot. And then trading Trevor Booker, which I think a lot of people forget about. Booker was our best big. You know, he came in and he did a lot of things that a lot of our guys don't do, especially rebound. He just brought that extra energy. So jumping from 20 and we're projected 30 win, but if we end up, you know, somewhere between 33 to 35 wins, I think you can't say the season wasn't a success. Jumping 13 games, losing one of your main players, and then just let's look at some of the development of the guys. Spencer Dinwiddie, for example, his numbers are kind of crazy when you think about it. From last year to this year, he's went from 7.3 points per game to 13.3 points per game, three assists last year to six assists this year, and he's only seen his minutes jump 6 minutes per game. So he pretty much doubled up his points and his assists and only getting six more minutes a game. That's a substantial jump on the floor. Caris LeVert, another guy, went from 8 points last year to 11 points this year. You know, his assists went from 1.9 to 4.2. Obviously, on the court, you can see his improvement, his poise, his playmaking. You know, that's a big jump. Like, I know, obviously, we all kind of want a LeVert and we expect him to take a jump, but it was more of a score jump. We didn't necessarily expect him to take this jump as a playmaker. So that's a plus. D'Lo, obviously, we mentioned he hasn't played a ton of games, but he was having a career year before his injury. You know, he was one of like seven or eight players that averaged the stat line that he was averaging. So shout out to him. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. Jack did a great piece on him earlier in the year. We talk about him all the time. He went up from 8.7 to 14.3. He went up on his field goal percentage from 43% to 47%. His free throw attempts went up 3.2 to 4.7, and he became a legit offensive threat. You know, the last two seasons, he was a guy that could dunk the ball, you know, work on the fast break a little bit, maybe get lucky with a jumper, but now he's actually a guy you have to respect. And the Nets team in general, not a huge jump in offensive rating, but it's still an improvement. They went from 28th to 26th, but in defensive rating, they went from 23rd to 15th. And having a good defense is not something we're used to in Brooklyn.
No, and you look at the fact that the defense is what wins championships. You look at the best teams in the NBA right now, Golden State Warriors, Boston Celtics, their game last night, two of the best defenses in the NBA, the Toronto Raptors, the Houston Rockets, have taken that jump because they've added guys like PJ Tucker, Luke Mbamute, and Clint Capela's taken another jump as well. Defense is what wins you championships. I would rather see our Nets take that huge jump on the defensive end than the offensive end, because it shows that the foundation, and we've talked about how many of our good wins have started on the defensive end, getting stops and leading into transition points, you know, getting easy buckets when you make those nice stops, getting steals and deflections. So that defensive jump has been probably one of the more surprising jumps. You know, you almost expect some, you know, natural improvement from guys like D'Lo, Spencer Dinwiddie. We certainly didn't expect this market rise from him, but you know, we saw the work that he was putting in. We saw the Nets preseason, some really promising signs from a lot of our guys. And now adding in guys like Jahlil Okafor, there's going to be, and Nick Stauskas, and there might even be another move we make. Who knows? You know, the OTG trade deadline, there's been plenty of moves up there. The Nets might be in there. I put up one. Whether anything happens will remains to be seen. But, you know, there's still a couple of days left till February 8th. Something might happen. Sean Marks might make a move. But at the end of the day, we, like you mentioned, Nick, there is an element of greed to it because the Nets have improved in so many facets of our game. But I think if Nets fans are educated in what they know and they're listening to the buzz, they're on Nets Daily, they're on Twitter, then they know these things. But I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing to want more, because if you're satisfied with what you've got, then you're not going to make that improvement. So if the, you know, there's obviously going to be those Twitter trolls out there that are like, you know, the Nets should be, you know, pushing for the playoffs. What's going on here? The Knicks are doing this, blah, blah, blah. But I think, you know, the desire for more is a good thing. And hopefully, you know, that's the same thing that's happening within our organization right now. And I have no doubt that it is.
Yeah. And I don't really have a problem with the desire for more, but I think you have to think about it in the bigger picture. Like, going and trading for a veteran right now is not going to benefit the Nets at all. If they're looking at a young guy that possibly could help them now and later, yeah, maybe. But it's not like the Nets are in a position to give up a lot of first round picks either. I think the one thing, if you're a fan, that you might want from Sean Marks is maybe a young stretch four. You know, somebody we can try it at the stretch four instead of Quincy Acey for the future. That might be something. But other than that, I'm okay, because there's so many young guys that have improved so much. And I think, you know, as the season progresses, they're just going to keep improving, especially somebody like D'Angelo, who's coming back from injury. I'm really excited to see what he can do. We can throw out some really fun lineups with like D'Angelo, Caris LeVert, or Spencer Dinwiddie, Damari Carroll, you know, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Jared Allen. There's just a lot of combos you can throw out there that are a lot of fun moving to the second half of the season.
Definitely. I think that's the exciting part of where this Nets team is going. There are so many intriguing storylines relating to not only the lineups, but the individual players themselves. There's a lot of guys that have a lot to play for. So it's going to be exciting times ahead for in this last sort of period going into the All-Star break and beyond.
Yeah, for sure. Got a few more things for you before we get out of here, Jack. Was Caris LeVert snubbed from the Rising Star game?
Nick, I went through the lineup on the Team America, and it is a strong squad. I think the least impressive player on there was Malcolm Brogdon. So as well-informed fans do, they jump onto B-Ball Ref. You do the player comparison. You see what's going on there. All right, okay. What are the numbers like? And unfortunately for your boy, Nick, Malcolm Brogdon does edge him in a lot of key areas. You could have chucked him in maybe for some other guys, but you know, Lonzo Ball may not be having the season that many were hoping he have, but he is having an effect on the Lakers team, and you know, he was always going to be in there. But both of these squads are really, really, really strong. You could also make a case for the starters, also made a case for their boys in Toronto, like OG Anunoby, Fred VanVleet, not being on either squad, whether it's the Team USA or the World. But these are some strong squads. It's almost like we're talking about snubs now, not just for the All-Star game, but for the Rising Stars game. So it's good to see such great young talent, not just out of Brooklyn, but from the NBA in general. It shows that the league's in a good place.
Yeah, honestly, I think you might be. Lonzo is always going to get in there because of the hype with his name. But I think that's probably the one guy I would probably throw LeVert over him. Just a lot more efficient. And Lonzo's banged up right now, so he might not even play. And isn't this a rising star? Like, Malcolm Brogdon's like already like 25.
No, no.
But let's get a young guy in there. Like, I know he just won Rookie of the Year, but he's like not that young. And then also, like, the fact that they had to split it up, you know, states and world, that I think it kind of, you know, hurt some guys not getting in. But I agree with the starters. Some of the Raptors guys, especially for the impact they're having, they should have probably gotten, at least one of them should have gotten the game. I think that's the weird thing, is that the Lakers have three, Boston has two, and then there's just like a lot of teams that don't have any. So it would make more sense to kind of spread it out. I get it that some of these guys are well-deserved, but like there's plenty of other teams in the league, especially that have young talent. And this is a great way to get them involved in All-Star weekend when they don't have an All-Star.
Definitely. And I mean, we talk about, you know, how faint this rookie class is. Guys like Donovan Mitchell, Ben Simmons, Kyle Kuzma, Jason Tatum. On the most recent episode of JBT, we just talked about just how insane it is. Every week we're seeing these ridiculous stat lines from rookies. You know, Jared Allen putting up double-doubles, and he's not even getting a mention. It pains me to say, but it's just so strong. And it's great to see, because last year was a bit of a lull, despite the fact that Joel Embiid dominated in those 30 games. But, you know, Caris LeVert showed his glimpses, and he's continued that going into this year. And maybe one day, like we mentioned in previous pods, he could actually have an all-star appearance. But, you know, there could be plenty of guys on the Nets squad that make that sort of appearance. And also, Joe Harris from the three-point contest. My campaigning clearly didn't work. My 155 followers didn't clearly get behind me enough. So I blame them, not myself. I did all I could. It's as big a snub as Lou Will not getting in. The NBA should be ashamed of themselves. But, you know, next year, Joe Harris, if you're not in, then I will write to Adam Silver himself. I'll fly over to Secaucus or New Jersey, wherever he's located, and I will make an argument for him in person. Absolute travesty.
Honestly, it is kind of like, you think that, like I said, you think the NBA would want to get as many teams involved as possible. So, like, having some guys from, you know, aren't necessarily known, I think a three-point competition is a great way to get them some hype. And people are going to watch regardless, so it doesn't really matter. But moving on to Jared Allen, who you just mentioned, he wasn't really mentioned with the Rising Star game, but like you said, there's just so many great talents, and he didn't necessarily play a ton of minutes early. But of late, he's really starting to pick it up. You know, this month of January, he's seen some good minutes, like you said, picking up double-double. I think he's had double digits in three straight games. We've seen the three-point shot a little bit more. His defensive impact is apparent, still has the best defensive rating on the team. What are your thoughts on Jared Allen and the improvements that he's making this season?
You look at his month-by-month splits, Nick, and there's improvements across the board. I think the one thing that really stood out for me was his true shooting percentage in the month of January. So we go back to October, where he played a couple of games in November, where it was at 45 and 58% respectively. You know, decent, 58, that 58% is quite nice. And in December, where he played quite consistently, 14 games, it's at 55%. In the month of January alone, and we're coming to a close now, another 14 games, it's at 70.2%, a true shooting percentage of 70.2%. That's guys like Clint Capella. That's guys like, you know, maybe not Steph Curry, obviously, is a famed shooter, but that's guys like DeAndre Jordan. It's crazy to say that he's shown such improvement in such a small amount of time. You know, his points have gone up. His minutes have, funnily enough, have actually dropped down. You know, in December, he was averaging 18.5 minutes. In January, he's averaging 17.5. But his points have increased. He's averaging 8 points in the month of January compared to 6.9 in the month of December. So, you know, improvements across the board from Jared Allen, and just absolutely really, really positive signs.
Yeah, honestly, and it's kind of funny, like you said, the minutes going down. It probably is somewhat of Okafor. You know, Kenny's been trying to get Zeller, Okafor, and Allen all minutes in the same game. It's tough to get three centers in there. But I love the improvement, and I think the rest of the league is starting to notice him a little bit more. That defensive impact is definitely making guys miss shots. You know, he's starting to have his, you know, when he comes on the floor, the Nets defense just seems so much better. He also moves so much better than all the other Nets bigs. You know, no offense to Zeller and Okafor, they just don't move that well. Like yesterday in the game against Minnesota, it didn't make a big difference, but he was able to close out so much faster on Taj Gibson than Zeller or Okafor could. So having somebody who can move their feet and then moving forward, it'll give the Nets so much more switchability when he starts to get into his game. Also, his aggression on the boards. You know, I think it might have been the OKC game where he had 4 or 5 offensive rebounds. He's been starting to do a lot better job of using his length to just tip the ball out. You know, kind of what Tyson Chandler's been known for a lot in his career. You know, he's so long and lanky and he has pretty good ups that he should be able to do that a lot more. So I think moving forward, having actual rebounding presence, you know, the last rebounding presence the Nets had was probably Reggie Evans, and he couldn't do anything offensively. So having somebody like Allen with the athletic ability and possibly a jump shot in the future is a really nice thing for the Nets.
Yeah, just great signs, Nick. And you mentioned those rebounding numbers. In the same amount of games in December and January, he had 68 total rebounds in the month of December, and he's had 73 in the month of January. So a nice little jump there. Also, a nice little jump in his assist numbers. You know, he had 5 assists in 14 games in December. He's had 8 in the month of January. So I think he's learning the system. He's feeling more comfortable in the system, as most rookies are this time of year. You know, he hasn't really hit that rookie wall because he hasn't been playing the heavy minutes of a Donovan Mitchell, a Kyle Kuzma, a Ben Simmons. You know, they're managing him really well. I'm hoping towards the end of the season, we start to see some nights where, you know, we've seen nights where he's sort of closed games because he's been just so good and so impactful defensively that we have to keep him out there. It'll be interesting to see how his minutes vary night to night, but I'm hoping he can see a couple of 25-minute nights.
Yeah, honestly, I think that's the smart thing to do. It's kind of, you know, ease his minutes for the next, you know, month or so, and then on that last month or so to really let him play out. You know, let him play 25 to 30 minutes. Let him get some clutch time minutes because we've seen him in the clutch. He's done pretty good. Defensively, he provides another element. And like I said, we've mentioned this. He hasn't done it a ton, but he's hit a three-point shot, you know, a couple times in an NBA game. If he can add that to his, you know, skill set, it's going to be a game changer for the Nets and for his career.
Definitely. And I mean, it's a stretch big. You look at a guy like a Clint Capela right now, that's sort of what we compare. And, you know, maybe DeAndre Jordan, that's sort of what we're comparing. And you mentioned Tyson Chandler, who's a nice, one of the best rebounders of the past sort of 5-10 years. Those are sort of the comparisons that Jared Allen has had. If he can add even a slightly decent 3-point shot, like Joel Embiid right now is at, I think, 29-30%. But people respect him enough that they have to respect the shot. So if even Jared Allen can get to that point where he can make it, even like a Tyler Zeller, what he's done this year, in that corner, it's almost like he's money from there. So it just adds another dimension to his game because, you know, if he can, it just stretches the floor, spaces the floor nicely, and it just adds another element to a really promising skill set that he already has.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, people might not realize it every time. It's like it spaces the floor. And yet, you know, the big might still come over and try to defend the rim. But now they're in motion and your probability of drawing a foul is so much more likely when they're coming at you. It's a lot harder when you're already standing still and you're like 2 feet from the rim. But if you have to come over from the corner across the floor, it's going to have an impact on the game. So 3-point shooting from your big is a big game changer, especially in Kenny's system. So excited for that. Excited for Jared Allen and excited for all the Nets, like we said, you know, people are getting down on the losses, but you just got to look in the improvements of the players. You know, there's just so much to be happy for considering what the Nets were like 2 years ago and the lack of talent they had on the team. Now they have some bright spots and pieces they can actually move forward with for the future.
Yeah. You got to look at the big picture, Nick. And I think if that's the key for all Nets fans, you know, you stay level-headed, realize that what the long-term goals are of this organization. For those that don't know, maybe have a listen to the 100th episode of The Outlet where Nick and I got quite whimsical about the future prospects of our Nets, where we thought where they might be in 4 to 6 years' time. But right now, you know, the future goals are to just keep improving our players, keep acquiring assets, and who knows what could happen in this offseason if we draft well again. And it's good to see a lot of, I think Jesse and Matt mentioned on when they appeared on the pod a week or two ago, the fact that it's nice to have fans rooting for the Nets to do well in the sense that, you know, because the Cavs have our pick, it's much more fun to root against the Cavs than it is to root against the Nets. So that's another little storyline that sort of has the Nets in the conversation around the NBA in general. But, you know, the Knicks, the Sixers, the Lakers, hopefully we can get one or two wins in those next three games.
Yeah, definitely. We would love to win against the Knicks. And like you said, the Nets were kind of so bad and everyone felt bad with the draft picks that they're like, oh, that's kind of like the NBA's, like, you know, adopted kid type of thing where everyone kind of feels bad for them. And now we're starting to get decent and people are like, oh, they're pretty fun to watch. So, you know, it definitely helps the fan base and just moving forward. And like you said, we talked on the pod and like we said on this pod, the Nets probably are going to jump 10 games, maybe 12, 14 games. That's a huge jump to make in one season. If they were able to repeat that and do it next year, having a healthy D'Angelo, all the guys making improvements, Jeremy Lin coming back, there's a possibility for them to make another 10-game jump. And then you're talking about those mid-40 wins, low to mid-40s. You're looking at the playoff picture, and then we're right on schedule. Just like we mentioned on the NBA Outlet 100th episode. So
yeah, boy.
It just slow and steady, but we're going to get there. We're going to do it the right way. That's what Sean Marks wants to do. So, Jack, as always, great show with you. Thank you for hopping on. Thank you, everybody, for listening. You can always listen to The Buzz on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, and OTGBasketball.com.